Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, guiding you to a career in financial services. This episode originally aired on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Make sure you join me each week as I share with you information on how to become a financial professional and the things you should be considering as you navigate down this career path. Without further ado, here's this week's episode. A very common question is, what can I make as a financial advisor? How much would I get paid? And the answer really depends, but I'm going to break it all down in this video. Get the pen and paper out. There is often this thing around, how much am I going to make? You know, you may be a career changer and you're thinking, hey, I've got to make this work for me, and I'm accustomed to a pretty good lifestyle or a certain lifestyle, and I need to know, you know, what can I make as a financial advisor? And there's all types of reports out there. I'll have some down in the show notes that you may be able to link to. But I thought the best way to think about this is to break down what I feel are the three major characteristics or determinants on what your pay is going to be, and then walk you through my 20-year journey in this industry and tell you what I made at each increment or each level of my career based on those three determinants. And I thought that would probably be the most helpful. Maybe a little long today, but I want to make sure that I'm very thorough and I give you a very good bead on what you can expect to make. So let's hop right into it. Okay, so the very first determinant, I think, is the channel. I'm going to link a video up in the cards that I've talked about this before, but briefly, you can come in through the captive space or the bank wirehouse space. They're all pretty synonymous. So like if you worked for like a New York Life or a Northwestern or even a Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch, that is pretty much the captive wirehouse space. You're going to be selling products within a framework of a corporation. You can also come in through the broker-dealer model, which, you know, a lot of those entities have broker-dealers. But if you want to go through a regional broker-dealer like LPL or something like that, Cambridge is another big one where they offer products and securities, and you're usually going to be a registered rep of that particular firm or broker dealer. Then you can come independent, right? You can work for an RA as either an employee, a salaried employee sometimes, and you can give financial advice that way, or you can be a hybrid, which is a combination of the last two. So there's four different channels, and those channels really depend on how you're going to be paid. And this is how. So very commonly, a way that you're paid is through commission. It could be 100% commission or it could be some form of commission. But usually, when you first enter the industry, whether you're in the captive space as a financial advisor or you're in the broker-dealer space, the most common structure you're going to see is commission, where it means, you know, you eat what you kill, as they say. So you go out and you bring in a client and you sell them a product. You get a portion of maybe that product sell in the form of a commission. And those commissions can range, you know, and it depends on the product. So here's going to say it depends. But what I would normally say is that if you are just joining this industry, you can expect that the first few years you're going to be building up your business, and it may be really hard to have a consistent income or a six-figure income. It's just going to be difficult. You may not sell a lot of products because you may not know a lot of people. Your network may not be as developed. And so the commission structure can be pretty hard within that particular channel. Now, as an RIA or working for an RIA, you may very well get a salary, but you're going to get an entry-level salary because you don't know much, right? And if you're coming in expecting, you know, six figures or well into the six figures, that's going to be really difficult when you don't have the experience for working with clients. What I will say about each and every one of these entry points within this particular channel that we're talking about, you're going to have to get licensed, and that's going to be a major determinant. That's what I want you to take away right here is, no matter where you come, no matter what entry point, you're likely going to have to get a license. You're likely going to have your life and health insurance a license. You're likely going to have probably your Series 7 or your Series 6, which allows you to sell securities. And you may have to have a combination of the 63 and the 65 or the 66 so that if you work for somebody that gives financial advice, you will be equipped. There's also the SIE exam, the Securities Essentials exam that you're going to have nowadays. So the major determinant, no matter what channel, again, will be that you have to get licensed in order to do that. Let's move on to the next one. All right, now the second determinant is going to be the type of firm you work for, which is different than the channel. The channel is how you come through, right? You know, if you're working for a corporation or if you're working for an independent, but the type of firm, and when I say type of firm, I really mean culture, right? So if you're in a planning-focused firm that focuses on financial planning, well, it's pretty common that what you're going to see in that structure is individuals that are coming to that firm for services as clients are usually going to pay a planning fee. And that planning fee obviously is inside the revenue model of the firm, and that is what dictates or drives the economic engine of that firm. And therefore, you're going to see more probably salaried structure, maybe with some bonus or some type of commission or a bonus layer in that versus 100% commission. It's going to be pretty common for a firm that is focused on planning to have different areas in the firm that you may not be accustomed to. For instance, you may have a business development side, which is getting clients into the door, prospecting, marketing, and things of that nature. Then you're going to have a service side where certain advisors are doing the servicing, filling out the paperwork, you know, calling the clients, fielding calls from clients. And then you're going to have some type of probably back end or, you know, tertiary services such as technology and support and those things of that nature. So at least those three areas. And the type of firm really, I think, can drive the type of compensation you get. So if you're working in a firm like that, that's a small boutique RIA, or you can be in a firm that has that same type of structure that could be a hedge fund. There's all types of areas within this business that structure can apply. But I would say that determinant there of type of firm is usually going to be indicative of whether or not you're seeing a 100% commission structure or you're seeing more of a salary structure. Now, yet another type or determinant in how you would get paid and what drives your salary or your compensation in this industry is going to be the firm's revenue model, right? So if you're independent, that's pretty easy. Your revenue model is going to be, you know, whatever you choose it to be as far as what products you sell or what services you sell. But let's say you work for a firm, which a lot of you are probably going to do when you're first starting out. And if the firm is a asset management firm or, you know, a wealth management firm that focuses on asset management or investment management, typically what you're going to see as a profit model is the assets under management model, where they charge a certain percentage for how much they're managing of that particular client's portfolio. And with fees being quarterly, you know, or something like that, it gives the firm some pretty stable revenue. And therefore, you're going to see that, you know, you may see something like, if you bring in X amount of assets over a certain amount of time, you may get compensated on top of some type of salary structure or whatnot. But that is also pretty common. Or if a firm is mostly selling products, maybe proprietary products or maybe not proprietary products, where there is a commission. So you'll hear this term about fee-based and fee-only, which just means that fee-based could have some layer of commissionable products, meaning that there could be a third party or even the firm that sells a product for a particular commission. Whereas a fee-only advisor is not going to have any commissions in their fees that they generate, nor in how the advisors are compensated that work at that firm, at least the main principal of the firm or the founder of the firm. So that you'll start to hear that term also. But I believe if you look through your research and you start doing your research, you'll see that, you know, how the firm drives its revenue, whether that be assets under management, commission products, fee-based planning, whether that be hourly or fixed fee or whatnot, that's going to really determine how you get paid also, because the consistency or the regularity of income is usually a major determinant on how the employees of that firm will be compensated. Hey, Dominique here, and I hope you are really enjoying this week's episode. Look, if you're a current or aspiring financial professional and you'd like to join a community of like-minded individuals that I'm sharing my 20 plus years of experience with, make sure you visit my website at www.djh-capital.com for more information. Now back to this week's episode. Okay, now I want to pivot a little bit and talk about each of those determinants in my own career path as I became a financial advisor. And forgive me if I mess up some of these mistakes. If somebody's watching this that knows this story, charge it to my head and not my heart, because after having been doing this for two decades, some of the details are a little foggy. But basically, I started, I graduated in May 98, and there was a little gap between May 98 and about September or so of 98. Had some personal issues going on and basically got hired after I graduated about 4 to 5 months after I graduated by a hedge fund in the Dallas area. Did that job for quite some time. I think with what I'm talking about right now, the firm type was a real big determinant here because I didn't have to be licensed. I was not doing any front-facing investment work. I was working in the back office, as they call it, kind of like the operations and the support of the front office that did all the trades and the strategies and, you know, did all that stuff for the investors. We had institutional clients as most of our clients, or institutional investors as most of our clients. So mine was more of a support role, and I matriculated throughout that particular job for about 8 years. And when I first started, I think I was making somewhere around $35,000 or $36,000 a year, which was a lot for a new college grad. And not until probably my fifth year, if memory serves, was I in the six figures. And what that job mainly consisted of was a base salary. And then there was a component that was a bonus that was really tied to the team or the firm more so. And then there was a bonus that was tied to my actual individual contribution to the firm, which we measured that in different ways. And you would think that maybe that's kind of hard to do as, you know, in a team environment working for a hedge fund where operation report support. But there were different, you know, landmarks and milestones that you could do in order to bump up your individual bonus. So in that particular instance, you had the salary and you had a bonus structure, and the bonus structure was bifurcated between the firm and the individual. And again, I would say that my major takeaway here was that I realized over that 8 year career, or that 8 year stint in my career at that particular employer, that the type of firm was a big determinant. And then I would say next would be how they did their revenue, which was basically, as a hedge fund, they get a certain percentage of the profits. That was the major, I guess, major economic engine that drove their revenue, was getting a percentage of the profits that they made from the trading strategies, and they charged their clients that percentage. Now, there was a fixed fee component to it, and that probably paid the bills, if you will, but I believe the major profit, as you would see in most hedge funds, is once you make X amount in profits and you take a percentage of that off the top, then that's how you can really make some money in that particular revenue model. Now, we took a really hard pivot. After HBK, I stayed there for about 8 years. I think I left in 2006, fall of 2006. Took a couple of years off, about 18 months off, and bought and sold real estate, which has nothing to do with this podcast right now. That's a whole nother story. You have to catch me on another time to talk about that. But after that stint, I basically started working for a very small broker dealer that was, I think the way this worked, and they're not around anymore. They gotten bought several times since now. I don't even know the name of them, but it was like a life insurance company that had a broker dealer arm. And the life insurance company obviously had products that they pushed into the broker dealer arm, which the registered reps, including myself, sold to the public as, you know, financial products to meet their needs. And so this was by far probably the most difficult, I would say, time for me. It was right in the midst of the crisis of the financial recession, the Great Recession. And I was learning that aspect of the business, you know, the operational support of, you know, trading strategies in a, you know, multi-billion dollar hedge fund is way different than talking to, you know, let's say Mary client or Joe client about their IRA and how you can help them as a financial advisor. And that's when I really started to do that. And it was a very humbling time. And I would say one of my major takeaways that has nothing to do with the three determinants is the fact that it was very educational. You know, I people asked me a lot of questions, in which case I did not always know the answers. I had to go research. I had to find mentors. I had to do all these things in order to kind of build up my acumen when it came to finance. And in that first year, I don't know what I made, to be honest. I know it was less than probably $25,000 because I was new and I didn't know how to sell. I had no formal sales training. And so I had to build up my my book of business, as they call it. Now, this is where I went in and studied for my life and health insurance and also did the Series 7 and did the Series 66. So those were the three licenses I had to get within probably 90 days of working in order to start to sell. And see, that's another thing about the broker-dealer model that a lot of people don't know, is you have to get those licenses before you can start to market the products or sell the products to clients. So it's very imperative that you pass those tests. Now, in full disclosure, I do think I got maybe a 3-month stipend while I was studying for the exams. There was a little payout that, you know, as long as you passed the exams, you would get remunerated or reimbursed or something like that. But it was a 100% commission job. So The only time that I made money was when I sold some type of product or put somebody into an investment. And I would say by far that the major determinant here was that channel that I was in, right? You know, the channel and the fact that the revenue model was my own, you know, it was whatever I made. And then I take that back. Whatever I made had to go and pass through the GDC, the gross dealer commission, I think is what it's called. You sell something for, you know, $1,000, you get a $500 commission. That $500 commission then has to pass through the grid, and the broker dealer gets a cut of that, and then you get a residual. But as you, you know, sell more products, you go up the grid, up the ladder, if you will, and less of that money is taken out going forward. But at the same time, you know, you're marketing their products, you're using a lot of their infrastructure. So that's why they take that cut. And I would just say that, you know, just be cognizant if this is you, and it may well be you, because many people have to pass through this way. You know, and one of the major things that I said earlier that I think was key here, more than all the other determinants, was what I took away, which was the knowledge. It was the experience. It was getting the questions asked. It was sitting down with clients. It was, you know, driving clear across the city to meet with somebody and then have them cancel. But then, you know, talking to the other people in their office while they're there. There's a lot of different things that I learned during that experience that was very valuable for me. All right, my next pit stop was with a Dallas RIA. And this firm was, by far, it was another one of my and I know I keep on saying this, but I learned a lot here too. This is where I got a lot of my trading knowledge. This is where I got well into the six figures. I don't know what my starting salary was. It was probably about $55,000-$60,000. And from there, I was able to take advantage of the revenue model of the firm and the fact that they were independent to drive my salary. Because like the other example I gave you, there was a salary, but there was also a revenue sharing model. So that was kind of like a bonus pool, if you will. And the more that you participated in that bonus pool by way of bringing revenue to it, you got a certain percentage of that revenue. So that was a very lucrative model for me in my career, at least for, you know, personally, in my own personal financial picture. And I would just say that, you know, one of the things that I learned in that experience, though, was the differences in how a fee-only firm could practice, right? I didn't know a lot about that before I got there. And what I learned is you can have fee-only firms that just focus on comprehensive financial planning, or fee-only firms that just focus on investment management and things of that nature. So that's where I say the type of firm, the culture and things of that nature are going to be determinants on how you how you get paid and how you're going to like that job. When you're looking for an opportunity such as this, these are not the easiest to find, I would say. I actually found this opportunity found me. Somebody that I had worked for previously at another firm saw my resume come across the desk, they brought me in for an interview, and, you know, two or three interviews later, you know, I was working for that firm. So sometimes these aren't the most advertised positions because they're smaller. It was like eight or nine of us there. And so they're not advertising for a lot of positions. And usually the positions that they have taken don't come available all the time. So I would also say these are going to be positions that you find later on in your career, or maybe mid-career. Sometimes you're blessed to have them right out of school or early on in your career, but largely they're going to be probably later on in your career. But again, this was a great opportunity for me. You know, I was able to do a lot of trading, learn a lot about investments, build a lot of institutional clout and reputation and just knowledge around the subject matter, specifically bonds, which is what I did a lot of. And, you know, I learned a lot about different cases, specifically people in the retirement age or getting ready to retire. I learned a lot about those, what they need as clients and what, you know, what the value proposition for them is and things of that nature. So you're going to always be learning. If you see there's a consistent theme here through whatever opportunity I was in, that I was always learning. And you want to definitely do that, even if you're not totally excited about the compensation model. You know, you can still learn and get value out of that position. Which last but not least brings me up to where we are today. So 3 years ago, I decided to start my own registered investment advisory firm here in Dallas. And what I do is I charge, my revenue model is fee only. So I don't have commissions. If clients come to me needing a product that offers a commission, I usually outsource that to a trusted third party provider. And, you know, I think that driving what my revenue now what's got me to six figure now has been really the use of multiple streams of income. So the RIA is one thing, but there's also consulting that I do for financial advisors. There's also marketing and things of that nature. You know, as an entrepreneur, as a founder, there's things to consider. You know, you don't have to go down the traditional route, even if you are as traditional to get a designation like the CFP. How you run your firm, how you interact with your clients, how you market to them, how you serve them is all up to you. And I think you have to find that mix that not only provides for you from a financial and economic standpoint, if you're trying to get to six figures or you're trying to get to six figures and above, but you also have to do what makes you happy. You can't be just driven by the money, and you can't just, you know, want the finance part of it to be taken care of, because you could be making a lot of money and still be unhappy. I would say that the large determinant, what I feel drives my success now, is the fact that I love what I do, and the finances and the economics to support that just comes. And it's not because I'm not doing a lot of hard work. I am doing a lot of hard work, but the hard work is not as strenuous when you love what you do. So I would say definitely keep that as the bonus or the major determinant out of all the things that we talked about today. Make sure that you love what you do. So I want to ask you, what do you feel is the major determinant that you would consider when it comes to driving yourself towards that six-figure pay or six-figure earnings as a business owner? What do you feel is the most important out of everything that we talked about today? I would love to hear what you have to say about that and what your thoughts are. Leave those down in the comments, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend. It would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.